Ever wonder about the impact you have on others or the impact that they have on you? The Ripple Effect on Thrive Life TV explores just that. You'll understand how one person, one moment can transform your entire life. Discover stories of profound influence, mentorship, and life-altering connections. Join us to uncover the power of human interactions in shaping careers, relationships, and personal growth. Subscribe to Thrive Life TV today with a 7-day no-risk free trial and start understanding the ripples you create and receive in the journey of life. Your story of impact is just one click away. Go to thrivelifetv.com or search for us in the Google and Apple Play stores. We'll see you inside. Get ready to believe that you can have it all. Time for yourself, the kids, your marriage, and your business. My name is Amy Wine. I am a Jesus-loving married mom, CEO, professional counselor, marriage therapist, peak performance business strategist, and believer in keeping it real. Real life, real relationships, real people. I help overwhelmed CEOs design a life they can't wait to wake up to each day. Each episode, I meet you right where you are with time-tested tools and strategies that you can find clarity on who you are and all the hats you wear and live your life authentically on purpose. This is real life, raw, sometimes ugly, other times wonderful and fun. And I cannot promise you that this work is easy. But I could tell you it is totally worth it. Are you ready? Let's get started. I have a special guest for you today, and we're going to go a little bit off the board from talking about marriage today, because if there is one thing that I know that impacts every marriage with children in it, specifically, is the children. So our worry and our stress and our concerns and our thoughts about our children often become the priority and impact the marriage. Therefore, I thought it was important to bring on today Dr. Jonathan Gingell, who is a chiropractor in Cypress, Texas, to talk about children and activity levels in relation to depressive symptoms, because it's something that we see and hear working with children in mental health a lot of times is depression is becoming younger and younger and younger. So welcome to the show, Dr. Gingell. I call you Dr. J, but I'm not ever sure if it's supposed to be Dr. J or Dr. G.
You know, it's a funny story. I had a professor in school that was Dr. G. So in my mind, he kind of claimed that name first.
So it is Dr. J.
Dr. J.
That's what we call you at my house.
That works.
So tell us a little bit about you first. I know that you're married and have a young one on a personal level.
Yeah. So we're rolling into year 6 next month.
Awesome.
Of me and my wife being together. And then our son will be 2 in August. So we're new on that front. I guess relevant to the kid and the family thing too. I was the oldest of 4 kids and my youngest brother is 11 years younger than me. So I had a lot of experience dealing with younger children growing up. On the professional side of things, I've been a chiropractor now for 12 years, and I've run my own practice for the last 10 and a half. Our practice based out in Cyprus has been primarily athlete focused, but really we look for the inner athlete in everybody, whether you're trying to deadlift 400 pounds in the gym or deadlift your toddler when they don't want to get in the bath.
Right.
Same body mechanics. And so we want to make sure everybody can do the things they need to do.
Right. That's one of the things I love about you, because I'm not an athlete, but I feel comfortable coming to see you. I'm probably the farthest thing from your athlete you're going to get.
No, don't say that. Well, you've got a couple of young athletes on your own. And and that's something that we've, most families tend to have at least one athlete in the family. And the kids can be a pretty increased stress load on a family, especially young athletes in today's age with the hyper specialization of sports and kids getting extremely focused and extremely dedicated to a single sport younger and younger. voicing. Right. And that can really open them up for a lot of bad biomechanics, bad movement patterns.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I was telling my son yesterday, because I know he needs to come back and see you, because he's completely complaining about his back every day. And he's like, Mom, pop my back. I'm like, no, go see Dr. J. I'm not popping your back. That is not helpful. There's a problem.
In our own lanes, right?
Yeah. So you and I had talked about depressive symptoms in children. And I wanted to talk to you about that specifically today, because you had a study that you had told me about that decreased activity can lead to these depressive symptoms in kids. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So it was a study I came across. I'm always looking for new information in the practice. And this one came across and it made me think of you guys in your practice. And so I wanted to share it with you. But mainly, I guess the layman's takeaway from the study is something that I think is pretty intuitive to a lot of people. But the less active you are as a person, the more it potentially can increase how much depression you're experiencing. You know, you feel good when you get out and you move around a lot. You know, there's a lot of common phrases, the runner's high, that people are familiar with, where you get that big boost of endorphins. And the real key point in the study was to measure and quantify in adolescence. And so they took groups of kids starting at age 12 and measured their movement with a basic wrist accelerometer, kind of like your Fitbit or something like that. And they would measure the amount of movement they had and at regular intervals going through up till 17, 18 years old. And there were, and this is more in your realm of things, but there were questionnaires and studies they did as far as depressive symptoms, mood, and things like that. And they found a pretty direct correlation between how much activity and or how little activity and how much of the depressive symptoms were coming up. So it's good to have the science back what seems obvious to everybody, especially in this day and age. And that knowledge, being able to use that and apply that in our practice, we want to make sure everybody can move as much as they want so that way they can be active.
Right. And I think we think about it a lot with adults. And you know what? If you would just go take a walk, you wouldn't be as depressed. If you would start, how physical are you? And then you don't often think about it in relation to the children, but they are become more and more sedentary in things we do. Because, you know, now it's the digital age. So we're always on the phone. We're always on the computer. And it was kind of when the coronavirus hit, because we're in the midst of the pandemic, when that hit, I told people, I was like, now it's time. We talked to parents about, now it's time to get back to all those things that you say, well, when I was a child, I did X, Y, and Z. And our kids don't know those things, or they don't do them. Well, we went outside. We went outside to play. And I was like, now it's time to teach them to catch Frisbee. Teach them to do all these things and not let them sit on the video games. And parents just really looked at me like I was a little crazy there for a minute. But what are some signs and symptoms you see for children that are showing the depression due to activity, decreased activity level?
Sure. Well, so what you look for as far as the depression goes, and we see it in a lot of our younger, not the youngest, but we see it in middle school. We start to really see it show up in the high school athletes is what in the sports world we call burnout. So all of a sudden they're less excited about going to practice, or you can tell their effort level's going down. They reach a milestone and they're not as excited about it, or they suddenly aren't as driven to reach that milestone in the first place. It generally ends in what, like I said before, burnout, where you have a promising athlete who is just so sick of a sport that they want to quit because they've lost interest, they've lost their passion for it. And just within my own observations of our own patient base over the last 10 years, once the athlete hits that burnout stage, their activity level just goes way down because they've created their identity around their sport. And once that's gone, they kind of lose their sense of self. And so I see them, they definitely look less happy, and sometimes they don't find a new niche, especially a new active niche to put themselves in.
Okay. So how would you talk to a child about getting more active? Because when we see them, we usually find that when they're heading into depressive type symptoms, and we talk about going for a walk or going outside or whatever the activity would be, even if it's just a little bit of activity, we get,
And you know, and this is a pretty blanket thing because I have plenty of adults too that you know, they've spent a whole life not being active. So what I found works the best is to meet them where they're at. You mentioned the age of video games, and I'll full disclosure, I'm a pretty solid gamer myself. A great bit of advice that we've shared over the years is if your child loves to play gaming, and it works better with console gaming, but PCs work too. Get a little balance pad or a balance mat and tell them like, hey, why don't you stand on this thing while you're playing your games? And that way they're at least engaging their core muscles. They're standing, they're having to do something rather than just sit on the couch like a potato. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of starts that ball rolling. You know, there's always the common tactics I see bargaining. Well, hey, if you go do this, you can have X amount of time on the console. But the other thing to really think about is just get outside the box and try and find an activity that's maybe a little off the beaten path. Frisbee golf is a great sport that just gets people out moving. You know, you don't have to make a huge effort to get a lot of benefit out of activity. Most people would benefit from just a good 30 to 40 minutes a day of walking. Walking pets would be a great way to do that. Biking, you know, any of the standard activities, but the idea is to really try to find something you can where you can meet them where they're at and then kind of get them thinking about their body more and kind of build off that and move forward.
I like that. I like that about especially about meeting them where they're at and having them balance when using the video games. And I mean, that's worked in my own house. So it's done wonders. Thank you for that. So I like that. Because it does get them moving. And I remember in this study that we were reading too, and I'll link this in the show notes, the study for those that are kind of nerdy like us that want to read it, that even sedentary, like at a desk is helpful if your mind is active.
Right.
Yeah. If your mind is active, you could be a little more sedentary. So I kind of liken that with video games. Your mind is active. I mean, there's so much strategy that goes into video games. I don't think they're totally terrible unless they're just taking over a child's life. But then I draw some lines, but getting them moving at the same time and not being, you know, totally just sitting there, but doing something that sounds important.
Yeah, definitely. And make them keep their snack in the kitchen. So in between levels, in between lives, whatever game they're playing, they can't just reach forward and grab something. They got to run to the kitchen, grab it, come back. Yeah, I was talking with another patient the other day. Kids today will never know the absolute pressure of racing to the bathroom during a commercial break and having your sip scream, "It's back on," to try and get back and dive over the couch. When we were young, we had that little blast of energy every 15 minutes or so that they're lacking now because you just pause the TV.
Right. That's so true. Our DVR blew up yesterday, so I couldn't pause the TV last night. It was driving me crazy. I didn't realize how much I relied on it until last night. I'm like, wait, my kids kept talking. I'm like, just stop talking. I can't hear it. So you do become, and then I was like, what am I doing? I shouldn't be telling them that. Anyway, so one of the things you talked about was adolescents don't have the vocabulary or the body awareness to communicate when something in their body is painful.
Right. So you asked me earlier about how to notice these signs of depression building in the students or athletes. And this point that I made in our discussion earlier was that it's better not to even look for those symptoms. It's better to catch problems before they get to that point. And that's something that, so our youngest athletes, and we have some fairly young athletes that are in specifically things like dance and swim and cheer, where, you know, they may be 4 or 5 and their coaches are responsible and their training program's responsible. They're only maybe practicing one day a week, but they haven't learned the difference between what an injury is and what normal muscle soreness or normal pain from training is. And so they can only say it hurts. And I've seen time and time again where parents, either the kid stops saying it hurts because nobody listens, or the parents kind of reinforce that by saying, oh, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. And then all of a sudden they come in to see me and I evaluate them and it's just like, oh my gosh, you've got this major thing going on. Why didn't we see you a month ago, 2 months ago? And I just feel that, especially looking at the study, that kind of creates a system of negative reinforcement on their sport where, you know, maybe their trainer doesn't believe them that they're hurting, or their coach says, oh, you're fine, rub some dirt on it. And it's not that they mean to try to get out of practice. It's they don't know how to say, you know, this hurts in a bad way or this hurts in a good way, where an adult figure could point out that, oh, okay, it hurts, but it's supposed to, that's okay. Or, you know, this hurts and something's wrong, let's fix it.
You know, and as a parent, I think I've taken that stance before because I have had dancers and my daughter got hurt more in theater than she did anything, one of my daughters. And then I've had the football kid and I'm quick to say, it'll be fine. Let me just give you some Advil for tonight. It'll be fine. If it's not broke, we're going to be good. We'll wait a few days. Yeah. And sometimes that's okay. I think you got to know your kid too. So I have one that's awful whiny. And for her, it's like, we're just going to wait a few days. And then like if my son's saying it, his pain tolerance is so high that I know if he's saying something hurts, like something is not right. Like he needs to figure that out.
Right. Well, and that's so true. Knowing the student or athlete or child is the most important thing. And like you said, they have different pain tolerances, but learning some skills. So some of the first things I'll teach parents is have the athlete try to point with one finger exactly where the hurt is. And generally, if it tends to be in between two joints, so just say the middle of the leg or the middle of the arm or something like that, that's more, they're pointing at a muscle. And unless there was an incident during the practice or training, that's generally going to be more of the muscle soreness training. But if they're pointing at their joints, like their wrist or their elbow or their knee, then we're definitely looking at the potential of something being actually wrong. Okay. Joints tend to hurt more with injury, whereas muscles tend to just be more sore with training, at least at the youth level.
Right. That's a good point to keep in mind. Okay. So one of the other things I wanted to ask is kind of off this list I have, but I would have never thought when my kids were younger, a lot younger, and I know they started seeing you in middle school, a couple of them off and on, but I had never occurred to me to take my children to a chiropractor because honestly, I had never gone because they scared me. The thought of having my body cracked, which I love now, scared the bejesus out of me. So I never thought about taking my kids. So how would you speak to that?
I mean, I've got a canned response to that question. Is it safe? The first part of that response is I have been in practice for over 10 years now. I have thousands of patients and they're all still kicking.
And I know that's a fear a lot of people have. So I wanted to kind of put that to bed now that I've been on the other side and experienced a bit. I know it held me back for a while. And the thought of taking my kid is like, huh, but my kids are the ones asking me now. And I mean, they're older teenagers, but they're the ones asking now.
Yeah. So the emotional response that I would give is that, you know, we've seen a lot of people, they all speak highly of us. They all left happy and they all left healthy. For your more statistically minded person, I like to point out that just insurance in general is generally the arbiter of risk. More expensive to get car insurance for your teenage son and his red Mustang than it would be for your grandmother and her minivan. All right. So if we have that concept, if you look at this health insurance, most doctors, medical doctors, surgeons, their insurance is anywhere from $60,000 to over $100,000 annually. And there's a big range depending on their specialty, but it's generally up there in the, you know, seven-digit range. Not seven, five, whatever, numbers. Right. it's up there.
It's up there. It's high.
You get anesthesiologists. I mean, that's the most dangerous profession as a medical professional because you're having to put somebody under and, you know, maybe they wake up, maybe they will. But there's a high risk associated with failure of theirs. My medical malpractice insurance is like $2,000 a year, maybe.
Wow, that's a big difference. That tells you just how safe it is because if it wasn't, you'd write it'd be up.
And there's a lot of great resources. If you count every chiropractor in the country and every patient they have and every adjustment there that's performed on each of those patients, I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of adjustments. Mm-hmm. And there are exceedingly rare cases of severe injury. Mm-hmm. If there everyone does show up in the news, it's obviously a big deal. But at the same time, I mean, you see one maybe every 10 years or so.
Yeah, I hardly ever see it.
Yeah, so it's very safe. And personally, I adjusted my son an hour after he was born. And I'll say that the younger patients, the adjustments look very, very different than what they look like on an adult. And they don't start to look like an adult's adjustment until they're at least two or three.
Right.
But the amount of force applied is just dramatically less.
Mm-hmm. No, I can say it's made a world of difference for me. So chiropractic can help screen for movement imbalances early before they become larger problems. You started mentioning that earlier. Can you speak more about that? Like, how do you screen for these things?
So we have a couple different key things we look for in a patient when they come in and they've got some back pain. Obviously, we'll start off with where their problem or their injury is, but a lot of times the actual cause of that problem is not what hurts. It's not where the pain is. And a real awesome example of this is flexibility in the hips and back. So most people should be able to stand up tall and then reach down and touch their toes. I'm willing to bet a huge percentage of your listeners would laugh at that statement and say,
yeah, including me.
Right. So that restriction in movement isn't because you have tight hamstrings, which is pretty commonly accepted as why you can't touch your toes. A lot of times it's that you don't. And this is easier to see than to describe, but if you imagine the body, you have the legs going into the pelvis, mm-hmm. and then we'll call that the hip joint. And then above the pelvis, you have the spine going up into the back. So when you bend forward, the normal movement pattern is to hinge like a door hinge at the hip joint where the leg meets the pelvis. Most people don't have good control of the muscles in their pelvis because we tend to sit too much. And so those muscles become very inactive and inefficient. So instead of hinging at their hip the way they're supposed to, they kind of curl forward from the back of the spine. So the spine can't go as far as the hip. And so they start to get limited in their movement and they'll never make it to their feet that way. And you see that in athletes all the time. I have dancers who can put their forehead on their knees, but then they come in and they complain that their hamstrings are really tight.
Mm-hmm.
Those don't seem like they would go together. But if you actually watch this athlete try to bend over and touch their toes, you don't see that good hip hinge movement. You see that they've become hypermobile in their back and they almost fold their spine in half, bending over at the waist and the low back, trying to get down. So from there, we're going to take that athlete or anyone with a problem, and we look for those movement imbalances, and then we try to establish what's wrong. Is it that something is not moving and it should? And in my previous case, it would be the hip. Or is it that something is moving and it shouldn't? And that creates an instability where the body locks everything else down around it to try and make up for that. So in the dancer's case, their lumbar spine is very unstable. And so they tighten up their pelvis and they tighten up their leg muscles to try and make up for that instability. Mm-hmm. So we look for where the actual problem is and try to resolve that either with adjustments on joints to try and improve mobility, or we do some soft tissue work with muscles to get them moving more, or exercises or athletic tape to try and help train stability back into the body.
Would you recommend that, like when we see children that are depressed and we refer them to you, is that a step that you would take and want to take with a child before we would send them for medication for depression, so to speak? Because it tends to be, I'm going to go put them on medication, and I hate medication in kids if I can avoid it. Not always can, but what do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea. In school, we learn about health. They have this triangle model of health where the three points of the triangle, or the three legs of the stool, if you will, are mental, physical, and chemical. So whereas your lane, you would focus on the mental health, the emotional well-being, the thought process, we focus on the physical health and the mechanics of the body. Now, and I say chemical, I don't mean drugs when I mean that. I mean like the nutritional aspects, the food, the fuel coming in. So any problem can be any combination of failure of those three pillars. And so rather than try to prop up a wobbly stool with more chemical support when it doesn't need that, if you have a body movement disorder that's creating maybe a low level of stress or a low level of irritation, that's could be something that's creating a situation where one of your patients might have a back or a neck or something that's really irritating them, but at a lower degree to where they don't notice it, because just like a funny smell in a room, after a few minutes, you just kind of get accustomed to it and you ignore it. Doesn't mean it went away. It just means you're not paying attention to it. But that's putting an added stress on your mental pillar. And so just taking care of that mental side of the stool is ignoring the physical component that might be there.
Right. I love that analogy, because that helps me be able to also take that and explain it to parents as to why I want them to go see a chiropractor that specializes in children as well. Because usually by the time they get to me, they've already been tried to give medicine, or somebody's told them their kid needs medicine. And I mean, that just seems to be the go-to first. So I always want to rule out something physical first before I was like, okay, well, this is something chemical in the brain, not chemical, the fuel food, but chemical in the brain. So I want to do more whole health approach to it than just put your kid on some medication and they'll be fine, because that's not a long-term goal.
Absolutely. And I'll kind of break away from our conversation for just a second and talk about that chemical component. Cleaning up a diet first is going to provide so much better of a result than jumping right onto a medication in the first place.
Yeah.
It's hard to eat healthy today. It takes planning, it takes effort. And with the way people's schedules go, it's hard to even have time for that planning and effort. So,
Well, I think there's so many food allergies or sensitivities and things now that are making people sick that they don't even realize that's what it is.
Exactly. Or their dietary profile is so narrow. You know, the stereotypical, my kid only eats mac and cheese and chicken tenders. And that's a pretty narrow nutritional profile there. And so finding a way to introduce things into them, even if you have to resort to making smoothies and shakes with hidden veggies in there, it's so vital to make sure that they're getting the fuel in. I mean, is for their body to be able to repair and restore and regenerate.
Well, I'm kind of laughing because with my son and him talking about his back for the last 3 days, and I'm like, make a phone call to Dr. J. He wants me to do this for him. And I'm like, you're 18. You can do this yourself. If it's hurting that bad, like, you know how to make this phone call. So I'm trying to make him be a little more responsible for himself because he's getting ready to leave home. But I said, and while you're there, you might want to talk to Dr. J about the food you eat. Because I think that's part of the problem, and or your lack of food that you eat. So it was kind of funny because this morning he said, I need Dr. J's number. I'm like, again? Okay, we're going to put it in your phone this time, number one. And number two, I go, well, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to HEB. I said, to do what? He goes, I'm going grocery shopping. I did research on eating better last night. I'm going grocery shopping. I cannot wait to get home to see what the kid bought.
I love the gung-ho attitude.
And I'm like, could we talk to Dr. J about a diet first? Because last time he tried this was about 6 months ago, and he came home with 5 packs of turkey meat and 4 cartons of egg whites and like one other food. And that's what he ate for a week.
Like, all right.
I'm like, no. So we'll see. You'll have to ask him when he finally makes his appointment. So I kind of giggle about that. You have any last thoughts on this subject?
I saw the article and my first thought was not quite the depressive symptoms that it talks about, but it made me think of something from my own past in the ADD. My whole childhood, experts in the school kept telling my parents, oh, he really needs ADD medication. And they kind of put their foot down. They never gave me a good reason why, but for whatever reason, they decided that they weren't going to have any medication for me. And it forced me to really learn how to manage the symptoms on my own. But as I went through my medical training at chiropractic school, I really learned to appreciate how dysfunctional my body had become over years and years of training as a competitive swimmer. And at first, I was just regretted not having someone like me to help my shoulder feel better so I could train harder. But when I started putting more thought into it, it made me realize that, you know, I probably wasn't sleeping as well as I could because my body hurt. And I probably wasn't focusing in class as well as I could have because I couldn't raise my arm without pain in my shoulder. So thinking about how that physical injury, that physical restriction was impacting my mental ability in school, it kind of put some things together in my own mind. So I just thought that being able to help more kids earlier before they have to find ways around these problems would be a great way to help people. So.
I love that. And I really am glad we're doing this because it'll go out to, I have like 7,000 people on my email list. So it'll go out to all of them as well as our social. And not all of them are in Cyprus, but a good several thousand are. And I just think it's a thing to look at that's different because it's kind of going off the marriage topic, but yet it's, which is what my podcast is about, but it's not at the same time because I keep hearing over and over from parents, married parents, that their stress level over their kids or the sports and the constant, like you mentioned before, we have to get really good at one sport by age 4 and you better pick it because you're not going to be allowed to play all the other ones or you won't be good enough in the one you finally pick, right? So you've got some of that going on and the pressure and the stress. I think it just gives them another option that they don't know about because I know I certainly didn't. And when I mentioned it to my staff here, only one of them was like, oh yeah, I refer to a chiropractor just for some of my kids and my adults. And I'm like, awesome. But the rest of us were like, we never even occurred to us.
Yeah.
So I'm glad about that.
I'd love to come back and talk about early sports specialization. If you think another topic again, I mean, we're getting more into the family aspect of things, but
absolutely. But I think marriages are definitely impacted by the stress of the focus being on the kid. And we get in that married roommate stage because we've had children and it hits about the 10 to 12 year mark where everybody's like, oh, well, we're going to get divorced now because we're roommates because our focus has turned totally at the children. But if we can give them the resources that they need earlier on to catch some of these things, then it gives them more ability to focus on the marriage. So I think it's just as important to talk about kids and parenting and health issues because it's a concern for sure. If they're in the Houston area, how do they find you? And we'll put it in the show notes too, but tell them the best way to find you.
So our practice is right off 290 and Skinner. So in the Northwest Houston, Cyprus area. Our website is www.procaresports.com. You can see some more information about the practice there. We have online scheduling available there. And we're generally out and about. We're an active part of a lot of different running clubs and triathlon clubs and CrossFit gyms in the area. So we work with a lot of dance studios and the swim clubs. And we're just all over the place. So
right, yeah. You're pretty well known in the community. So.
Yeah. And as far as the clinic goes, we, you know, nuts and bolts of things, we offer chiropractic rehab therapy, like exercise rehab therapy. Mm-hmm. And we have some excellent massage therapists in the clinic. So it's a nice environment for that, especially right now. And then we're in network with Blue Cross, United, Aetna, and Cigna. So I know that matters quite a bit to people.
That absolutely matters to a lot of people, especially when, because we're a private pay. And then we're like, we need you to go here. And they're like, do they take insurance? Yes, Jesse does. Yes. So, well, thank you so much for coming on and taking your busy schedule and time of your day to educate us, because I really appreciate that. And I think it's going to help so many.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
All righty. That wraps up today's episode of Couch Time with Amy Wine. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And while you're there, it would mean the world to me if you would take just a few seconds and leave me an honest rating and review. You can find all the links and information mentioned in this episode at www.amywine.com. Please share your episodes with your friends and don't forget to tag me on Instagram at amywineco. Thanks for listening, and I will meet you here again next week.
Are you feeling like your marriage is more about going through the routine than the romance? Just the day-to-day drudgery of all the things and the chaos that surround you that you have to do? You're not alone. Hi, I'm Amy Wine, your marriage and family therapist and founder of Thrive Life TV, and we get it. Impact-driven achievers like you deserve a marriage that is just as successful as your business and your career. Your marriage is about more than just staying together. It's about growing together, laughing together, and reigniting the spark that makes you partners in every sense of the word. That is where Thrive Life TV steps in. Join me for exclusive sessions. We're going to tackle real life marriage challenges, from reigniting passion to deepening your emotional connection. We're talking real change, real results. It is time to transform your marriage into a thriving partnership that you both deserve. On Thrive Life TV, you're going to find practical strategies, shared experiences, and that extra push you need. Are you ready to uplevel your marriage? Visit thrivelifetv.com and let's bring the joy and love and yes, the fun back in your marriage. I'll see you inside.